This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Your brothers and sisters in IslamNet from Norway are establishing a masjid, a dawah center. This center, this masjid, this educational institution will act like a beacon of light, calling the Muslims in Norway back to the essence of Islam. So give generously and Allah Azza wa Jal will give you even more.
Let me kind of push back a little bit on that point, because you're an individual, like, obviously in your newest book, you're talking very categorically about precision. And I would say you're an individual that is very precise. You're categorized, like, if I were to say anything, I would say that you're an individual that is scrupulously meticulous in exactitude and, I don't know, meticulousness or whatever, yeah? So you speak and you think about what you're going to say before you say it. That's what you're known for. And in fact, if someone says something which is kind of off the mark a little bit, you pull them up for it, right?
And you know, usually because I don't understand it then.
Yeah, no, for example, like the Cathy Newman interview, like the assumptions and the questioning that she had when she was questioning herself, you pulled her up on it. And that's why it became so popular, the discussion was so popular. And you're a clinical psychologist. So what I was going to say is this, like, for example, if I were to make a video, right? I say this message to the, you know, to white Canadians or something, yeah?
Yeah.
And I said, you know,
it's hard to talk to them.
And I say, look, you know, tentatively, why don't you reach out to some Russians, you know? Or, you know, heaven forbid, you know, reach out to the black Africans or First Nation people, you know, whatever it may be. How do you think the community of white Canadians, let's say, for the sake of argument, will react to that kind of message?
Well, if it was you?
Yeah.
Well, you're pretty disagreeable, so you'd probably get bit back a lot.
Yeah, but exactly.
It's hard to say until you do it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I have reached out to other communities, let's say. I did an interview with a friend of mine who's a Native American carver who lives on the West Coast. And, you know, I'm not very happy with the narrative that's being promoted in Canada, which is that the European settlement of Canada is best viewed as genocidally colonial. And having said that, my friend, this carver, was in a residential school in Canada, and the residential schools were put forward by the government in an attempt, and other institutions, in an attempt to separate the indigenous children from their families and then socialize them rapidly according to European norms. And there was some positive motivation for that. And sometimes that helped and worked, but one of the things that did happen was that some schools were, let's say, invaded by people of a pronounced pedophilic and sadistic bent, and my friend ended up in one of those schools, and his life was so dreadful that you can't even hear about it without serious emotional damage. And so, you know, I went forward with that discussion, and it was very contentious, but it went very well, and it told a story that was true and needed to be told.
Yep.
And so, you know, you step into foreign territory at your peril, that's for sure. But, you know, and it was relatively difficult for me to arrange for this to be a possibility.
Yeah, of course.
But my thought, again, because I'm trying to look for what we have to offer each other rather than what divides us, I thought it was worthwhile.
Let me push back again once again on this point. So, for example, it's not always what you say. Sometimes it can be what you don't say. So, for instance, I think you've become somewhat of an emblem of Western civilization, right? In terms of you're an intellectual.
Heaven help us.
No, but you have. And I also push back on the point that this is a foreign culture, because I think that Islam, and you've mentioned this in the lecture as well, that Islam has now become part of, like, you know, Western culture.
Yeah, well, that's the open question. As we noted in the introductory remarks, it's like, is Islam part of the West? We're kind of having the same discussion about Russia in some real sense.
Yeah.
And
that's
really going well at the moment.
Yeah, so there's that part. But what I would say is that, you know, if there is a bloody history of Western colonialism, and that's almost undeniable. Like, for example, look at Algeria, for instance. Algeria, when it was annexed by France.
There's no dispute
in what happened there. So the issue, like, I'm giving you one example of many. The Spanish colonialism of Latin America, for example. There are things that happened. And I'm not saying that's not things that happened on the Western front.
Yeah.
There are things that happen on the Muslim front as well, of course.
This is true.
Yeah, no doubt about it, right? No, I'm not going to stand here and, you know, defend the Muwahhidun who came and were very intolerant to Jews and Christians and kicked them out of their homes and so on like that, who existed in Spain as well, in fact. So the point is, I feel like, I don't know, as a psychologist, I think my question would be to you, don't you think is it of any benefit to be concessionary in this regard? Like to start off a discussion by saying, like, we know that these are things that could cause resentment.
Yes.
Right? These, because, like, for example, I know a lot of Algerian people, and this is very clear in their historical memory.
Yes.
And the accusation will be that the West have colonial amnesia here. They don't. They are not taking into account what they've done. I'll be honest with you.
Well, they don't even know how. Well, okay. So,
do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, look, here's how I would address that psychologically. In many of the mythological stories that I've read, there is the motif of the evil uncle. And so, for example, in the ancient Egyptian cosmology, there were four deities, four central deities, although a host of associated deities, and one of them was Osiris, who was the deity of the state. That might be a good way of thinking about it. And he had an evil brother, Seth, who was always conspiring in the background to overthrow the state and to establish his own rule, say, based on power. And the Egyptians, this is thousands of years ago, had figured out by that point, because their society was quite large, that there was something in the social structure itself that posed a threat to the structure, and that was the tendency for the structure and its leaders to become willfully blind and for conspiratorial powers or patterns that would use resentment and the desire for power to overthrow that. And they thought of Osiris as willfully blind and Seth as an eternal danger, and that's true. But there's another element to the evil uncle too, which is that in some real sense, and it's a very difficult thing to sort through morally, all of us walk on blood-soaked ground, mm-hmm. because human history is, in some regards, a nightmarish catastrophe. Mm-hmm. And some of that's just because life was so difficult, but it's also because people did in unbelievably cruel and malicious and deceptive, committed unbelievably cruel and atrocious and deceptive acts. And so we're all stuck with this problem that here we are in relative peace and harmony so far, although we seem to be doing everything we can to try to disrupt that at the moment. And part of the price that's being paid for that is an endless litany of historical catastrophe. And then we all have to face up to, well, what does that mean for us in terms of our individual responsibility? And how do we construe ourselves and our society in light of that fact? And we could go back and forth continually about whose historical atrocities were worse. And that's a rough contest because, you know, the devil is definitely in the details there. And then it also brings up the other problem, which is, well, when the Spaniards went to Central America, a lot of the bloodshed they produced, or the death they produced, was actually a consequence of the introduction of disease, because that took out about 95% of the native population in the Western Hemisphere. And then the conquistadors were, well, maybe they weren't the finest representatives of the highest flowering of Western civilization. We don't know to what degree they were the sort of thugs that couldn't get along at home and went out adventuring. And even if I, say, attempted to take full responsibility for that, I'm not sure what it would mean, because I suspect I have a lot more in common with you people in the modern world than I do with Spanish conquistadors from 300 years ago. Now, I'm not saying I bear no responsibility for the bloodshed of the past, but I would say we all bear that responsibility, and that's something, I would say that's something like the conception of original sin.
Yeah, and that's the point of difference. To be honest, I would disagree with that point. Like, as a Muslim, there is a verse in the Quran that says, وَلَا تَزِرُ وَزِرَةٌ وِزْرَ أُخْرَى, that one soul should not bear the responsibility of someone else's actions.
Yeah, well, that's the other ethical complication. Yeah, yeah. Can you call me out in relationship to the atrocity of the past? Of course not.
No.
But it's complicated, right? Because because at the same time, you do say, and I don't mean you personally, but you know, we can say things like, well, the West is not bearing sufficient responsibility for its colonial past. And so at some level, that kind of devolves down to the individual.
Let me kind of rephrase it then. I think that's more of a left-wing criticism. It's like, you know, it's reparations and affirmative action programs.
All that.
I'm not advocating any of that, and nor do I even believe in any of that, to be honest with you.
Nor me.
Yeah, so what I was putting as an alternative to that is this, is that there is this kind of, I would call this maybe an Orientalist, a new Orientalist narrative, which states that Islam is incapable of X, Y, Z. Call it tolerance, call it whatever it is. And look at what's happened in Islamic history. You've got all of these deaths and you've got all of these kinds of things that are happening comparative to what we have in the West. And what we're saying is that let's look at what you have in the West, because liberalism was an ideology that was started in the 17th century. Like, I mean, really it was crystallized, you know, with John Locke and all these kind of things then. And after liberalism was established, and in fact, the constitution and the documents of the founding fathers and stuff like that were based on the liberal secular principles. Even after that, you had Napoleonic Wars. Even after that, you had colonialism continue. You had slavery continue until 1867, whenever it was, you know, the American Civil War ended. So what we're saying is that this picture of history, that, you know, the West is best, basically, this idea, because our ideology can fix all problems, it's not reasonable when you look at the historical record. I mean, one scholar called Naveed Sheikh actually done a piece. It's called Body Count. And he was counting the amount of people that died in each civilization, and he put the Western civilization as the highest. And because you have things like World War I and World War II, and these things were, World War I and World War II were nationalistic conquests. They were not religiously inspired. I mean, you can argue to what extent were World War I and World War II religiously inspired, but certainly Islam was not a main feature of the 30 million people that died in World War I, or however many million people died in World War II. So the point is that we're saying is that and obviously, you've got concepts in the West like manifest destiny, and which I think every single president of the United States of America believed in, westward expansion, these kind of things. The point is that the proposition that the ideology of the West can fix our problems, this is what we have an issue with, because what we're saying is that if we look at the historical record, there is no evidence of that. In fact, what has shown us is that there's more bloodshed. Individualism has caused more death. Like, you know, with all due respect, I know that you do cherish individualism. I'm not saying everything is bad about it, but when you have a society deplete of a communitarian ethic, is bereft of a communitarian ethic, then you can have these issues. And so these are conversations, and I think you are moving towards a communitarianism. In your newest book, you were talking about institutions and these kind of things and the respect for tradition and these kind of things. I'm not sure if I'm reading you correctly, but these are the kinds of conversations I think we need to have. But on that point, I think I don't want this to be interrogative.